Prescription drug abuse is one of the fastest growing substance abuse problems in the state. What are preventative measures doctors can take to keep these drugs from getting into the wrong hands? This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. A bill that would mandate physicians check a database before prescribing certain medications is being discussed at the State House. We'll talk about ways this could possibly help or get in the way of the patient-doctor relationship. Then in the second half, you've probably looked at that cell phone while you're in the car. There's a bill that would ratchet up offenses for being distracted behind the wheel. We'll look at what it would mean and its likelihood of becoming law. Join our conversation after this news. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. The board which licenses and disciplines Iowa physicians says too many doctors are prescribing painkillers and other medicines to people who end up abusing the drugs or selling them. But physician groups are resisting proposed legislation to require doctors to prescribe with more care. Here with me in the Capitol's Law Library is Mark Bowden, the Executive Director of the Iowa Board of Medicine. Mark, thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Joining us by phone is Dr. Robert Lee, president of the Iowa Medical Society and a family physician from Johnston. Dr. Lee, thanks for being on the show.
Glad to be here.
And also here in the law library is Steve Lucan, the director of the Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll start with you, Steve. Can you put into perspective what you're seeing? How much of a problem is this here in Iowa?
Well, we do see it as a very significant challenge for the health and welfare, health and welfare of the state. We've seen, unfortunately, several years of increased numbers of people who do overdose and die from prescription pain medication. Really, in 2011, we saw an all-time high of 62 people who died as a result of overdose. So we see it as a very significant challenge. We don't know the 2012 numbers. We won't know those for a little while, but the trend line has been really startling and something that we think we need to pay attention to and try to do something about.
Now, Mark Bowden with the Iowa Board of Medicine, why was this legislation important to you to bring forward this session?
The Iowa Board of Medicine has seen an increase in the number of cases involving physicians who knew or should have known that the patients that they were treating were essentially drug-seeking patients that had intended to abuse or divert that medication. We've seen actually 25% of our cases in the past year involved inappropriate 25% of the charges filed involved inappropriate prescribing. It's an issue before the board, and we see this as the natural extension of other steps the board has already taken.
So let's break into the bill a little bit more. What exactly would the bill require of doctors?
Well, it's pretty simple. It would require them to check the Iowa Prescription Monitoring databank and look at a patient's controlled substance prescribing history if the physician believes that the patient is at risk of abusing or diverting the drugs. So only in those cases, not for every prescription written, but only if they have reason to believe that that could occur. The law also would require the Board of Medicine to write some rules that help physicians discern those patients who might be at risk of diverting drugs.
Dr. Robert Lee, you're the president of the Iowa Medical Society, but also a family physician from Johnston. Have you had much of an opportunity to review this bill to understand what it would require of you as a physician?
Yeah, we have looked into this, and we really like the prescription drug monitoring database. It has been so helpful for us physicians. And as Mark has told us, that Iowa physicians are adopting the database very well. I mean, that we continue to increase numbers. In fact, kind of the envy of other states in the number of physicians that are using this. So we really like the database. The difficulty that we have with the legislation is the requirement that's in there. Right now, we have pretty big sticks that are available. If Mr. Bowden and the board believes that a physician's not doing something right, they can take his license. I mean, they can. So there's a pretty good stick already part of the law that we have here in Iowa. And that right now we're looking at it more the carrot part of it. What would be your incentive? And right now they've made the prescription drug database more accessible. My nurses now have authority to go ahead and check the database. And so what has happened in my office, a patient, often a new patient, will come in. They'll tell the nurse the story, and she says, that doesn't sound right. So before I even see the patient, she's already looked up the database, found out that, yes, indeed, they have seen multiple physicians, that they've had multiple pharmacies involved. And so all those are the red flags that get us concerned. So us physicians really like the database, and we want to use it. What we don't like is the nebulous part of the bill that says, you know, should have known or would have known. So now we're opening up to an interpretation of, well, you know, it's one of those things afterwards is like, well, yeah, I guess I could have seen that or that. But at the time, you don't really see that. So I guess that's a really long answer to a short question. But we like the database. We don't like the overbearing rules that go along with the legislation.
Do you feel like there's a breach of the doctor-patient relationship at all in any of this?
No, that's not really discussed with that. I mean, that we will often tell the patients, and in fact, I will tell the patient that we have this drug database, and we'll be checking this before I, you know, this is what I think we need to do, but I've got to make sure that all of this is legit. And so I tell them, if everything you've told me does not correspond with what we find in the database, I'm not going to be able to prescribe that medicine. And so sometimes I step out of the room and I'm going down the hallway and all of a sudden the door opens up and they're out the door. You know, they know that they've been busted. So we really like the database.
Mark Bowden, how would you respond to some of the concerns that Dr. Lee has?
Well, I think Dr. Lee is a very progressive physician in Iowa and is using the database as it's intended. The board's concern is those physicians who aren't. Last year, the board filed charges against 38 physicians, and 10 of those involved inappropriate prescribing. And as you look at those, they are the kinds of cases where the physician should have checked the database, and they didn't. And the board is concerned about that. They laud Dr. Lee and others who have been proactive. The problem is that there are those out there who won't. And we understand that it can be difficult in discerning which patient might be at risk. The law allows us to offer some rules that help them. And if I could tell you, we've circulated proposed rules, simple things such as if the doctor, you know, some of the signs of drug abuse or diversion might be if that patient had been selling prescription drugs through, you know, if there had been a public arrest, if that patient had forged or altered a prescription, that can happen. If that patient had reported that someone had stolen or borrowed their drugs, different kinds of the telltale signs. There's quite a few, and that kind of laundry list exists in laws and rules in other states to help doctors from what is called doctor shopping. There are patients who, as Dr. Lee alludes, who they will go to one physician to get a prescription, and the savvy professional physician will say, I can't do this, and they'll go to another one and another one and another one till they find one that will do that. This helps the physician as much as it helps the public in that regard.
You're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. We're talking about prescription drug abuse and a bill that would mandate physicians check a database before prescribing certain medications to their patients. Is this a problem where you live? Have you seen prescription drug abuse from loved ones or friends? What are we not talking about regarding the topic? Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or reach out to us on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. Steve Lucan, I guess, put into perspective a little bit for us about this notion of doctor shopping. Is this something that you're monitoring from your office? What are the signs? What are you seeing from your office?
Well, it's something we have some real concerns about. You hear reports from law enforcement across the state. One example I would share is an unfortunate one, but a van load of people from out of state show up and they all disperse around town to pharmacies and use prescriptions from out of state to try to basically game the system. We see drug overdose deaths having gone up now for 11 years in a row. So this, we think, is a real problem, a growing problem. We think there are a lot of solutions out there, and one of them, I think, is increased usage of this prescription drug monitoring program. We think that's a really wonderful tool to improve patient care, but also raise flags when there are people going to multiple doctors. The other data we would see right now is we see actually fewer prescriptions being written in Iowa, which is a real major shift in the trend. But we also see more people going to more doctors, which would indicate, we don't know this as a fact, but it would appear as there are more people going to multiple doctors to get prescriptions, which is the definition of doctor shopping. So there's a lot of reason for concern out there, and I think it's something that policymakers as well as healthcare professionals need to be talking about.
So let me make sure I'm understanding this right. So there's a decline in the amount of prescriptions that are being written by doctors, but at the same time, more doctors are being visited. Are doctors sharpening the ability to hone the diagnosis, the art of diagnosis? Is that what's happening here? Or?
Well, Mark might be able to better answer that. It's possible that people are going to multiple physicians for specialty reasons. They have to visit more doctors. You know, the concern would be that it indicates people are going to multiple prescribers to get pain medication, and part of that might be what's happening in the industry. We think it's positive. We see a lot of emergency rooms really clamping down on the number of pills they will prescribe, or actually saying we're not going to give you any pain medication through our emergency room. So it's potentially having people go to multiple doctors then instead. And the other thing that a lot of people haven't talked about is there's a big piece of diversion, unfortunately, happens inside the home, happens with loved ones and kids getting medicine out of the medicine cabinet. But there's a criminal element as well. People actually sell these pills on the street. They're often targeted to young people. They are odorless. You know, there's something that's very easy to conceal and carry. So it's a real issue in the youth population.
Mark Bowden, how would you respond to that, the trends that we're seeing?
Well,
I can't
speak to the treatment volume per se. What I know is that the Board of Medicine wants physicians to treat pain, and they want the board wants physicians to be responsible in the treatment of pain. And I respect Dr. Lee's position that he is doing what the board hopes all physicians do, and that is if there are issues of any concern to look. But we know that right now that's not occurring through the general population of the physicians. And the board has had a measured response to this. For the past 4 years, the board has taken progressive steps. Several years ago, the board issued a statement that encouraged physicians to treat pain. There was concern in the physician community that they might get in trouble with the board for overprescribing. So the board said, no, we're not telling you not to treat pain. So they issued a public statement on that. And then the board continued to tweak its administrative rules that encouraged physicians, just encouraged them to look at this prescription monitoring database. It encouraged physicians to use pain management agreements with patients, kind of like a contract that says this is, you know, what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. They also encouraged physicians to use drug screening tools such as a drug screening, blood or urine screening, to make sure that the patients were getting the therapeutic levels, and to hone in on those where they suspect there might be something that's going on that's inappropriate. All of that was occurring, and then 2 years ago, the board adopted rules that require physicians in Iowa now to take mandatory education on responsible pain medicine prescribing. And that's just been on the books since August of 2011, and it's on a 5-year cycle. They have to complete this educational unit every 5 years. So that plus a lot of education on the board's part. We provided more than 2,000 copies to Iowa physicians of a physician's guide to responsible opioid prescribing. So it's tightened its rules. It's offered education to the physicians. It's done a lot of steps. And the board just feels at this point that this law is our next step on this, because this issue has not gone away.
Dr. Robert Lee, we'll go back to you, the president of the Iowa Medical Society and a physician there in Johnston. What would make you throw all your support behind a bill like this? What would need to be changed?
We like the stuff that Mark's done so far. I mean, we are very supportive of the database, of the education. We're not crazy about it because mandating, you know, we got 2 hours of drug chronic pain management training, and then we have another 2 hours on end-of-life care. We've got another on adult abuse. We've got another one on child abuse. So soon our whole curriculum of education is going to be mandated by the board. So we're not crazy about the hours, but I really like what Mr. Bowden has done with the pain contract. They gave us a kind of a model pain contract to work with our patients. They've kind of given us the authority to say, you know, what he was alluding to is that, you know, we sometimes were thought that patients shouldn't have pain, and so we should give more and more drugs to get rid of the pain. And now they've said, no, you know, that some people will just have to live with pain and we'll find other ways of managing that pain and not just narcotic sort of stuff. So what we would want to see from the bill is that there not be a stick in there, that this doesn't become a criminal offense because of our use of medications. We already have in the law that the Board of Medicine can review how we do things, and as Mark has said, often the charges are due to physicians that are not using the medicines correctly. I don't think the law is going to get these physicians to do that. And as Steve talked about, and I've actually been a part of this, where a van full of people from out of state, Texas often, will pull in and just start flooding the urgent cares with requests. Unfortunately or fortunately, those people are usually not in our database, and so even our prescription drug monitoring database wouldn't solve a problem like that. So I think the legislation is kind of too little too late. We've got the rules in place that the board's given us. They have full authority to stop physicians from prescribing it. And so this now creates a new hurdle to jump that physicians just are not looking that it would help our patients.
So Mark Bowden, it sounds as if Dr. Lee is approaching this issue very effectively, but are all doctors as trustworthy as he
well,
is?
Well, I think physicians are trustworthy professionals, but I think that some of their best intentions can go awry, and the board is trying to reinforce that this is a step in a procedure. Just as a physician needs to sign a prescription, we're saying if you suspect that there are issues there, check that database. And I think that through the education that comes with legislation and the education that the board has already afforded, that will continue to drive the level of awareness much higher in our physician population. I appreciate the concern about a mandate. I think that the board has looked at this since aggressively since 2009, and here in 2013, the board feels that this is the next logical extension of what it has done, because the other things are they're working, but we're still seeing things fall through the cracks.
So is this a matter of doctors just doing their best to get belligerent patients out of their office or the ER?
I don't think so. I think that physicians are incredibly smart and discerning their patients' needs and interests. We believe that this law helps them, that they can lawfully tell the patient without question, as Dr. Lee is already doing, that I'm going to have to check this database because I just read in the paper this morning that you were arrested for something, drug diversion or whatever. But it's a public safety issue. I think the question for Dr. Lee and other physicians in Iowa is, how do you tell the public that you have this information available but you're not using it and necessarily, or you don't want someone to tell you to use it? I think that's the public is left thinking you mean you can look at a patient's physician prescribing history and yet you don't and you're not required to. You could go ahead and write that prescription. I think that's kind of where we are. It's there, And maybe over time, if a physicians demonstrate that they're doing it, then the law is maybe redundant. But as we see right now, it's not universally accepted.
So, what is the likelihood that this bill will get anywhere this session?
Well, like all legislation, it like this, where there are significant differences between the board that regulates a profession and its association, we have to continue to look for compromise. The Board of Medicine works closely with the public safety groups. Our mandate is public safety. We certainly maintain strong communication with the physician associations and organizations. We hope that this bill has a chance. We want to see it debated on a committee level. We want to see it debated in the House and let some other voices be heard in this legislation. So we're hopeful that it will at least get to that level the first year of the biennium.
So what more can be done to combat prescription drug abuse? Worst case scenario in your situation that this bill doesn't go anywhere.
One of the things that's happening and the Board of Medicine has endorsed it again. This isn't just about physicians. The board believes that public education is critical. We have supported a project that the Iowa Academy of Emergency Physicians are pushing, and it's a public awareness posters and so forth in emergency rooms that talk about how they cannot just issue a controlled substance prescription to anyone that walks in and so forth. So I think public education about that. Certainly the board continues to partner with the governor's office on drug control policy and other public safety groups. So those things are going to help us, but we're hoping that at some point the physicians we'll see this more or less as affirmation of a good practice and not a mandate.
Steve Lucan, director of the Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy, how would you respond to what more can be done to crack down on abuse of prescription drugs?
Well, I think there are a couple of other pieces of legislation which will be helpful. One is making the database much stronger. There's another bill out there that would allow for interstate connectivity so that somebody in Dubuque County could see somebody's prescription history when they're going over into Illinois, for example. We think that's really important. The Board of Pharmacy has done some good things to help make this a much more useful tool. They've actually gotten the VA, for example, to report all of their prescriptions into the database. Previously, they were not. So I think that this tool is getting stronger, and it is a big issue of just trying to get more doctors to use it. And we don't know that there's a magic number, but you know, we think there's really under about 5%, 10% of the time before a prescription is written that somebody's actually checking the database. And again, you don't have to check it every time, but we think that there's really a case to be made that it should be more often than that. The other thing is really back to the public education within families and households. Unfortunately, we see a big chunk of diversion happening out of people's medicine cabinets. So it is parents talking to their families, talking to their kids, making sure that they know this is a problem and trying to get those drugs accounted for.
This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I want to thank my guests here in the first half, Mark Bowden with the Iowa Board of Medicine. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And to Dr. Robert Lee, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And finally, Steve Lucan, thanks for being here.
Appreciate the opportunity.
This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. I've done it. You've likely done it too. You're driving in your car, and sometimes it's just subconscious. You reach down, you pick up that smartphone, and you text, you check your email, maybe you tweet. There's a bill discussed at the State House that aims to crack down on being distracted behind the wheel. Here in the second half of River to River in the Law Library at the State House, with me is Senator Todd Bowman, a Democrat from Maquoketa and the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. Senator Bowman, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Clay.
And joining us by phone is Ben Stone, the executive director of the American Civil Liberty Union of Iowa. Ben, thanks for being on today's show.
It's good to be with you. Thanks for having us. Senator Bowman, how are you?
Wonderful. Thanks, Ben.
And Timothy Brown is here in our Iowa City studios. He's the Associate Research Scientist at the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa. Timothy, thanks for being here today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So we'll start with you, Timothy. Talk about some of the different types of distractions, what people are doing in their cars when they have accidents.
Well, there's a lot of different things that are going on when drivers are engaged in distraction. A lot of it is stuff that's been going on forever, reaching around in the vehicle, looking in the back seat for whatever reason, eating, drinking as you're driving down the roadway, even the standards of picking up and reading a newspaper while you're driving on the interstate or applying makeup as you head into work in the morning. So there's a lot of things that are going on in the vehicle. And those, as technologies increase, we see increasingly technology moving into the vehicle, whether that's interacting with your in-vehicle system to choose music off of your digital hard drive on your car or your iPod, or picking up your cell phone and making a phone call or using your voice interface to make a phone call. We've also got increasingly texting is one of the most dangerous things, and that increasingly is done in cars these days.
So, Senator Bowman, texting while driving already against the law, if you will. What would this bill do that would change things to the way the law is currently set?
Well, this bill was written by Senator Johnson, and so it certainly isn't quite exactly the way I would have it carried out. So, I'm looking more on focusing within taking a secondary violation of texting and making it a primary enforcement where, you know, our law enforcement would have maybe a little bit more teeth and capability of, you know, recognizing individuals that are texting and being able to do something, whether it's give them a warning or give them a ticket to give them an incentive not to participate in that behavior.
So while the bill is under the label of distracted driving, you're really honing in on that one point of texting.
Well, I see that as one of the few things that really is doable, because we got to look at enforceability. You know, Timothy talked about a lot of different behaviors. You know, eating and drinking, for example. You know, you can be eating an ice cream cone and swerve into the other lane. We already have laws that allow the officials to pull you over for that type of behavior. But so we don't want to outlaw, for example, eating ice cream in your car. It's the behavior of being distracted that we're concerned about. And the number one distraction is texting, you know, and obviously cell phone use with a handheld is right up there. And we're looking at, you know, one out of four crashes for teenagers are having to do with texting. We have 5,000-6,000 die each year due to distracted driving.
Now, so these are in Iowa?
These are national statistics.
Okay.
We certainly want to look at some of the things we can do, especially our youth drivers, the ones that are starting out, and you know, maybe take a little bigger risk when they're driving. Certainly want to educate them and give them the tools that allow them to be less danger to themselves and to the others that share the roads with them. So I think I want to hone in on those particular behaviors the most. Not that adults can't do this also. Like you said in your intro, I'm as guilty as anybody in the past, but I've kind of set a pretty firm rule. I have young children that are just starting the driving process, so I put my cell phone in a place where I can't get to it while I'm in the vehicle. And there's more technology coming out. I just heard the other day, there's an application where you can put on your phone and it'll say, I'm driving. It'll respond to the text saying, I'm not avoiding your text. I'm driving. You'll have to wait until I pull over or I get to the end of my journey.
So, Ben Stone with the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, what's the problem with this bill?
Well, I think Senator Bowman has, identified some of the, some of the concerns about maybe how this bill might be a little too broad. And that there's a lot of things that we all do that we don't want to do, we know isn't safe, you know, eating a burrito in the car, eating a hamburger. There's all kinds of things that people do when they're driving that are not good. We don't want to make all of those criminal acts. And I think there needs to be an understanding up front that everybody in the ACLU knows that texting while driving is stupid and dangerous. get that right out front. It is horrible. I have kids. I don't want it to be done. It's dangerous and it's bad. I think what we need to understand is that how do we respond to that reality, is that we all want to discourage driving while texting. The current law that says that it's a secondary offense, it's important, and that was one thing that we really were urging several years ago when the law was passed. And it's really got to do with what everybody, you know, knows is out there, and that's racial profiling. The more discretion you give to police officers to pull people over at great discretion, at great personal discretion, it has this effect. And it's something that the ACLU is very concerned about. And then the third one about it is that these kind of laws have actually, you know, they've been around a few years. There's been some early studies. And the evidence is really not very strong that they're helpful. That actually there's actually a possibility that by making texting while driving illegal, which, you know, it is for people under the age of 18, but for adults, it's a secondary offense. Under 18, everything is illegal on a cell phone. It's above 18. Adult drivers can't text. And so what we see is that the theory is, at least, that when you're driving and you're texting, if it's in a state where it's illegal, you do it lower. You lower your eyes. You lower your hands. And that makes it even more dangerous. So while I think it's early for those type of statistical analyses, this is from the Insurance Institute for Traffic Safety. So those are some of the concerns. But it's refreshing to know that there is some really thoughtful deliberating going on in the subcommittee, and that's really something we're encouraged by.
Perhaps you've been distracted while driving or seen someone doing something dangerous behind the wheel. What are your solutions that you've done? Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or reach out to us on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. I'm on there as well, Clayton Masters. We'll go back to you, Senator Bowman. Racial profiling came up as one of the concerns that Ben Stone mentioned from the ACLU. Is that a concern that you've thought about?
Well, Clayton, I appreciate the question, but I don't think it is a major concern. Right now, currently under law, it's already taken care of teenagers in an adequate way. I haven't had any constituents say they were pulled over and they felt like, you know, the police officer had something out for them and was using this as an excuse. What I've always been told, I have a police officer in my class when I'm first semester, talks about constitutional rights, and they generally say it'd be pretty hard for them not to find something that they could pull you over for if they want to. So really, the discretion out there is already so wide, and I can understand Ben's concern, but it's already there. This isn't going to change that discretion. One of the things I thought would be interesting for the viewers to hear about is some of the technology that's moving forward in regard to helping parents and helping adults be able to provide new options for those that want a different direction in regard to how to avoid texting and driving or cell phone use. And, you know, there's mechanisms out there now that allow you to basically shut the phone off when it's going 20 miles per hour or whatever speed you want to set it at. And I had just gotten some information earlier that there's new technology available that a chip can be put into a car that would detect the driver passenger's seat and send a signal that would basically not allow the phone use or text use in that driver's position only. So as technology moves along, I think there's all sorts of great options available to avoid the fatalities and accidents that we're seeing due to texting and cell phone use.
Well, Timothy Brown, the associate research scientist at the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa, what's some of the are these technology trends that you're seeing, or what are some of the things that you know about?
Well, there are a lot of trends with distracted driving. I think the focus that there's been around the country on trying to reduce the injuries and fatalities associated with distracted driving has got a lot of entrepreneurs out there trying to figure out how they could help us solve that problem. And so I think you'll see a lot of ideas that pop up. Many of them will never come to fruition. They may just be impractical at the end of the day. But there is a lot of new technology that's coming out these days. You know, one of the things that we're looking at the University of Iowa is trying to focus a little more broadly on distraction and not really care what the cause of it is and focus on how do we reduce the negative effects. And whether that's providing feedback to redirect the driver's attention to the roadway when they become distracted, or providing guidance over a longer period of time to kind of make them aware of the sort of negative consequences they have. You know, as you know, for example, saying that, you know, on this last drive you were looking away from the roadway more than normal, and you departed your lane 7 times over the course of the last 20 minutes, so that the drivers become aware of the negative consequences. You know, as we talk about these things, many times it becomes a societal change that you need, and changing people's attitudes about whether or not they're willing to engage in a task. And so I think that's one of the benefits of having the laws on the books, is it says, as a society, we don't think that distracted driving is such a good thing, and we're putting these laws in the books that say that. There are other ways of reinforcing that, and technology provides us some opportunities to do that as well.
Is texting really the worst problem and deserving of being the most targeted, Tim?
Texting takes your eyes off the road for a very long time, and what we know is that it's those long glances off the roadway that lead to fatalities. You know, the challenge that we all struggle with is, you know, particularly those of us living in less urban states, you know, there's lots of wide expanses where it provides us with an opportunity to say, you know, I've got time to take a quick glance at my text and respond to that beeping phone down there. And, you know, it might be 99 times out of 100 nothing goes wrong. But whether it's a kid that runs out from a yard, or a deer that runs out in front of you, or a car that stopped in front of you, things happen that are unexpected, and if your eyes are not on the road, you can't see that they are occurring, and then you can't respond to them in time to avoid a crash. And that becomes a challenge with things like texting, because they do take so much time with your eyes off the road.
And Senator Bowman, certainly that's what you're focusing on.
Yeah, I had a question for Tim. What, and this is a statistic I should have in my memory bank, but isn't it 1 second that you take your eyes off the road, that you travel almost 100 yards if you're going 50 or 60 miles per hour? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's about that. And I think the challenge becomes, you know, it's, you know, on the rural highways, you're going faster, so you're covering a lot more distance. But, you know, we were talking this morning in my office, and one of the areas where we also see a lot of it is in the parking lot. You know, you've got people who are driving 5 miles an hour, but that's where you're most likely to have something unexpected happen. And when your eyes aren't on the roadway in that sort of environment, it's even worse. And so there's this trade-off, which is, yes, you cover a lot of distance at higher speeds, but on the interstate, there's a lot less that's going to be surprising you compared to in a parking lot or in a residential neighborhood. And so I think the answer is there's not really a good spot to be doing it unless your vehicle's stopped. But, you know, there's trade-offs between high-speed and low-speed situations.
Ben Stone with the ACLU, I want to invite you back into the conversation. What are you hearing in this back and forth that is important? What are you hearing that we're not talking about that you'd be concerned about?
Well, I think that that Timothy's brought up some really interesting things that might prove very useful to parents and private citizens. You know, I think that what we're always supportive of is empowering parents, empowering individual citizens, empowering people to make decisions and to, you know, make decisions for their family that are going to make everybody safer. And so, you know, we've often, you know, told, you know, we fought for the right of parents to make decisions about their own activities with their own children. You know, that's a part of their right as a parent. And so I think some of these really intriguing ideas and concepts that Tim has mentioned, and you know, I think as long as those remain a choice for parents and individuals, that is a really encouraging development for the safety of our roads. We would be concerned if there was any kind of government mandate that every car would have to have this type of software or chip that's going to cover everybody and make everybody endorse this kind of technology, which they might not want to.
So, Senator Bowman, are there things that you're going to look at now for sharpening it to be less of a – I mean, the concern in the subcommittee was how vague it was. I think those are some concerns that you raised.
Absolutely. That was – you know, I did this out of consideration for Senator Johnson. And while, you know, as an educator, I see the tragedies of texting while driving, the answer to the problem isn't as simple as one might think. And so we have to be careful of getting too excessive with our law that would, you know, create a situation where you're making it criminal to eat an ice cream cone. So we don't want to do that, but we certainly don't want to say, well, we can't do anything to address this problem. So we need to be, you know, thoughtful and look at what are some of the unintended consequences of any legislation, but this one in particular. So I think the first step would seem reasonable is to make this a primary offense where a police officer could pull you over if they see you texting while driving. And while it may not be a perfect case scenario, not solve all the problems, it certainly wouldn't hurt anything for people to know that there's a fine associated with this behavior. And then add the educational component to it. Driver's education across the state, you know, I think they're doing their job. At our school in Maquoketa, Iowa, we had an assembly where they brought in some people, some specialists, and they showed the students, you know, some of the dangers, some of the horror stories of, you know, somebody that had a text message right there in their hand as they died at the steering wheel of a fatal auto accident. So we need to continue to educate people that, hey, and allow parents to have ideas or tools and mechanisms to help them strengthen that message to their kids. Because before the show, we talked about, you know, my concerns with my children, anything I can get on my hands to make it easier for them to not be tempted into answering that phone or texting while driving would not only be a relief as far as a mental state, emotional state, but also fiscally important because, I mean, insurance is very high. If you can reduce accidents, certainly would pay off in the long run.
So, Tim, can people simply put the phone away or just not look at it? I mean, how much self-regulation can be done? I mean, is that too simple of a solution?
Well, one would think that it's a fairly easy thing to do, but as we all know, it doesn't turn out to be the case that people are willing to do that. You know, the stats show that as you look at the generations that are defined, and you look at the propensity to engage in use of the cell phone while driving, the younger the drivers get, the more likely they are to be willing to engage in this. I think the exception is with the teenagers, because of most of the states have laws that make it very painful for them if they get caught engaging in cell phone use or texting while driving. But still, a great number of them admit to doing it. But not quite as many as when they turn 18 and they're no longer subject to those graduated licensure laws. You know, I think ultimately it does come down to societal changes and people saying, you know, I'm no longer willing to engage in this because it's no longer socially acceptable to be that distracted while driving. And that takes time to happen. It doesn't happen overnight.
So, Ben Stone, curious, moving it from a secondary to a primary offense, is there concern there that more people would be trying to, you know, keep their eyes off the road as much as possible to look at their phone down below the dashboard possibly?
Well, I think that would be a reasonable reaction that people might have. So that would be something that the legislators would need to look at as they consider that. You know, we would certainly be opposed to making that change. We understand the motivation, but I do think that for people that live in communities where they do experience this really disproportionate traffic stop situations where they're pulled over, I mean, time after time after time. And the senator's right. I mean, certainly police officers have a lot of discretion already. But I do think that the fact that it is a secondary offense does deter kind of unfettered discretion. And I think that in a free society, we do want to have some limits on the power of police officers to pull over people. And so, you know, that's something that I think really needs to be seriously second-guessed before that change were to be made.
And Senator Bowman, really quickly, about 20 seconds, we got to wrap up here, but how would you respond to that concern?
Well, like I said before, I think police have discretion basically to pull over somebody for something if they want to. And so this isn't going to add to that issue. It's already there. If they see somebody texting it's there for them. One thing I'd like to really quickly say, Clayton, you know, one thing, you know, for parents, you can check their texting record, and if they, let's say you're going out to Des Moines for the basketball tournament, you could see if they were texting and driving. And I would encourage parents to, you know, check occasionally, not the contents of their message, but the time and if they were texting while driving. I know we try to do that at home, and that certainly helps, you know, the kid know there's going to be some accountability to their driving while.
Certainly, we could go on and on about this topic. Thanks to our guests, Ben Stone, the Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
To Tim Brown, Associate Research Scientist at the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
And Senator Todd Bowman, a Democrat from Maquoketa and the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. Thanks, Senator.
You're welcome. My pleasure, Clay.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are available at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us at any time, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.